Okay. Merci. Alors, première chose, je voudrais remercier Mme Player et Mme de Poil pour l'invitation. C'est une colloque internationale intéressante, importante et bien organisée aussi. C'est important. Alors, merci. Deuxième chose, je vais parler en anglais. Il me semble que c'est un peu plus facile de me comprendre si je parle en anglais lentement. Alors, je parle en anglais, mais je vais prendre des questions en français, si c'est mieux. Okay, so my paper is an attempt to think through some of the migrations that were triggered by the return of Alsace to France in 1918. I would like to take up some of the reflections and the questions raised yesterday about the concept of migrations and how this helps us to understand Alsace and its place in European history. And I would like to address them through the lens of the French police and administrators working in the region and at the border, to use their reports, which are largely held here in the Archives Départementales, to reflect upon how the concept of migration helps us to understand the return of Alsace to France, but also the entangled history of this period. So the migrations that I will be talking about cover the two decades after 1918. This is deliberate. I see return as a process. Return was not completed in 1918 with the entry of French troops into Alsace or the following year with the Treaty of Versailles. It was a process that evolved over the following two decades. It involved various actors and it was shaped by the border. So I'll start my paper today with some brief thoughts on how the concept of migrations helps us to understand the return of Alsace to France. Then I will narrow down my focus to talk about those groups of agents of the state who were involved in policing, controlling, and occasionally promoting migration. So this is specifically the police, border guards, and local administrators working on the border and in Alsace. So to begin with some central thoughts on the concept of migration and why it matters when we're talking about Alsace after its return to France. So as we all know, migration is currently a very important political issue. I was hoping to escape it and escape the current British discussions about it while I was over here. Unfortunately, that's not possible, but we do still have a Prime Minister. We'll see. But for reasons that are connected to this, migration is also a major topic of historical research. It's central to our understanding of how states and societies have drawn and defined the membership and the boundaries of societies. And research into migration has demonstrated the role that the otherness, the perceived difference of migrants plays in shaping ideas of identity and belonging. And it is, of course, an issue that holds particular salience in border regions. These areas generally have closer contact with their neighbours across the border than populations in the centre. And they're also frequently exposed to migrations on a daily basis. Yesterday, Madame Player made the point that Alsace is a région migratoire, and I think this speaks very closely to the ways in which many border regions are defined by migration. The context to Alsace's return to France was the experience of the First World War, which uprooted millions of people across Europe. And its end saw a large movement of people, both from the shatter zone of the former empires of East and Central Europe, and from countries in the West that had suffered occupation or devastation through the fighting. This movement continued throughout the 1920s and 1930s as a result of civil war or the policies of particular regimes. And as states developed policies to deal with migratory movements, and particularly with refugees, these had knock-on effects on other states. And again, this is another key point that came out of yesterday's discussions, that the history of migration has to be understood as an entangled history that reveals the ways in which nations are connected and have shaped each other's histories. So even though policies to do with refugees reflected states becoming increasingly insular, they were nonetheless connected to each other throughout. So this international context of migration shaped the situation in Alsace, but so too did the more local issues of Franco-German relations, which improved in the middle of the 1920s and then dramatically declined in the 1930s, and the relationship between Alsace and the government in Paris, as both Paris and Alsace had their expectations of return frustrated after 1918. And this also shaped the experience of the population in Alsace in the two decades after return to France. Now, Alsace's return to France in 1918 triggered a series of migrations, of laws, of administrative and economic institutions, of cultural artefacts, and also of people. And some of these migrations were long-term, as old Germans and Alsatians left the two departments after 1918 in some of the processes that we've heard about this morning. And as new arrivals came in from the French interior to take up posts in the civil service or the education or the army. And others were short-term, with migrations triggered by tourism, by shopping, or visiting family or other reasons. And so the key point is that there was a heterogeneity of migration scenarios. And partly in response to this, there was a heterogeneity in administrative and official responses. The overall aim of these administrative and official responses was to keep out undesirables while bonding the nation state. But this aim was complicated by the fact that the government's primary means of reintegrating Alsace was, in broad terms, to remove what they viewed as German, whether German people, the German currency, German laws. Now, of course, this wasn't as straightforward as anticipated as a result of different ideas about what Germanness actually was. And the government's ideas of Germanness didn't always apply to the region. So in the time that I have now, I'd like to drill down. And having talked about the context to these migrations, I'd now like to talk about some of the themes that emerge from the reports on short-term migration. Okay. There's a very realistic image of the departure after 1918. My first part of my paper, I'd like to talk about the policing and surveillance of crossers. And in the second part, I'll move on to administrative policies to prevent or to ease them. As I said, it's based upon sources produced by the French state and its agents, and specifically on the reports that they wrote, containing their descriptions of crossings and crossers, or the policies introduced to ease or restrict them. And my focus is on those short-term migrations. I chose to focus on them as I was struck when reading the reports by the ways that they also raised questions about national identities and social membership of a community in a way that I hadn't expected. The reason for this is that the police and administrators who have left their records here in the Archives Départementales still had to decide how to treat these crossers. And in their attempts to do so, they spoke to those central themes of identity, belonging, and otherness. In their reports, many of the agents of the French state reproduced the anxieties and assumptions of the authorities in Paris, such as the problems of reintegrating Alsace-Lorraine after 1918, or the apparent threat posed by the Third Reich after Hitler's seizure of power in 1933. But policy also took shape in new ways at the periphery, both in response to the practicalities of daily life and through interaction with other interest groups, such as chambers of commerce
or municipal councils. And as a result of these multiple influences and interactions, policy developed in ways that were not always consistent and linear. Instead, moves to encourage cross-border trips were quite often followed by efforts to restrict crossings in response to local or national events. And so I would argue that through their responses to migration, these agents of the French state working at the border in Alsace offer an insight first into the problems of reintegration after 1918, but also, and critically, into the insecurities and the operating assumptions of the Third Republic in its final two decades. So I'll now finally start talking about these reports. I'll begin with some examples of the reports that border police wrote and submitted to Paris about migrants as they crossed the border. And I think these are interesting as the first encounter between crossers and France was mediated by these crossing guards and the police on the border. So in the context of Alsace's very recent return to France, most guards were focused upon checking the loyalty of the newly French population of Alsace, and policing and monitoring was intended to act as part of the integration of the Alsatian population into the French state through affirming their identity cards and passes that affirmed their belonging to the national community. Now, alongside this emphasis upon Alsatians, many reports also focused upon German crossers and the potentially destabilizing role that they could play. So examples of the anxieties that German crossers raised in the reports include Germans who were in possession of two sets of documents, first French passports and second German travel passes. In an age of belonging to a single nation state, this was a point of concern to crossing guards. And the Commissaire Spécial at Kehl also stated that in spite of their two sets of documents, there could be no doubt over what he called their true loyalties, which were to Germany. Or in other cases, there were Germans who were found to be in possession of, firstly, a border pass, allowing them to cross the border, but secondly, tickets to destinations in France beyond the border that they didn't have permission to visit. And so police raised their fears about what these Germans were planning to do when they used Alsace as a point of entry into the rest of France. In other cases, crossers actually used their encounter with the French border police to express their thoughts on national belonging. And again, guards reported on these encounters. So one report described the case of a young professor who was stopped at the border and produced a passport that said his place of birth was the Oran. But when the guard asked him if he was of Alsatian origin, the crosser replied, "Absolutely not. I am German. I was born to German parents." And he then added, in what the guard noted as a very contemptuous tone, "Oh no, I absolutely do not want to be French at all." So running through these examples is a broader set of anxieties about the potential vulnerability of the border. And this fear adopted acute force after 1933, when Adolf Hitler seized power in Germany. One report from November 1936 described events when a young man of apparent German nationality arrived at Kiel and asked how to acquire a French passport. He stated that in exchange, he had information to offer France about fortifications under construction in Germany and could provide photographs of this. The border guard referred him to the police officer on duty, who wrote it off as a pretext in order to create a border incident between France and Germany. Now, on reporting on this to the prefect, the police inspector noted that other border guards had reported similar cases, and as a result, he urged that all border stations needed to be on guard against such tricks. And these concerns about the border's vulnerability reflected a broader change in the interpretation of crossings. Already in 1933, 7 months after Hitler's seizure of power, the Contrôleur Général chargé des affaires d'Alsace et de Lorraine reported on a dramatic increase in illegal crossings from Germany into France between January and August of that year. He put this down to the new political context in Germany and noted that it was unsurprising, given the context of the regime's crackdown on racial and political enemies. But what was worthy of note, he pointed out, was that the character of the crossings had changed. So from Germany to France, there were now more spies, more political refugees, and more smugglers. While in the other direction, from France to Germany, the illegal crossings were largely made up of secret agents who were heading home to Germany and individuals who were smuggling anti-Hitler propaganda into Germany. So these were a few examples from the reports of the border guards, and I selected them because I thought they illustrated broader points about the ways in which the policing of migrations serves as a valuable reminder that the process of integrating Alsace into France involved negotiation and confrontation between Alsace and Paris, but also various kinds of interaction across the new national frontier with Germany, many of which were rooted in our central question of migration. So I would now like to briefly move on to the policies about migration and border crossings, which coexisted with the efforts to police and control crossings that I've just discussed. So in the early years after the return of Alsace to France, policy on crossings was dominated by efforts to ease crossings. And it reveals a growing recognition amongst administrators that certain migrations were necessary. And this understanding was rooted in the principle that good borders make good neighbours. And it was based on the desire to establish peaceful relations between France and Germany in the aftermath of the war. And Monsieur Muller pointed out just now that peace was the overriding concern at this moment. So one of the very first measures to ease migration resulted from reports from the prefects of Alsace that Alsatian citizens were having problems in accessing their communal land on German territory. And some reports suggested that German crossing guards had actually denied Alsatians access to land that their communes held on the east bank of the Rhine. So the Quai d'Orsay attempted to find a permanent solution to this problem by encouraging border communes to accept the German government's offer to buy their land, which would remove the need to cross the border. But many Alsatian communes refused and said that the German government had not offered them enough money to do so. So as the Ministry of Foreign Affairs worked on this question, local administrators developed a scheme in May 1922 that issued a pass to inhabitants of the border zone who were then able to cross without passing through the customs point and without presenting themselves to crossing guards. So it was a scheme that recognised territorial connections, as a number of Alsatian communes retained their possessions on what was now German territory after 1918. So that was territorial ties. A subsequent measure recognised cross-border family ties. In 1925, the prefect of the Haut-Rhin decided to allow German citizens to enter without a visa if it was a case of emergency, such as the death or the serious illness of a parent. This special dispensation meant that they could pay 10 francs and they needed to agree to leave as soon as the emergency was over. And they needed to provide proof of their family connection in Alsace and the emergency to get this dispensation. And I think these two cases suggest a growing recognition of the necessity of certain types of migrations. So while guards, who we just heard about, may have been expressing fears over the vulnerabilities of the border, administrators were taking steps to ease migrations. And this divergence between the police and the administrators represents a reminder that the state is not a unitary entity. Rather, it contains a multitude of actors who did not always develop policy in a coherent way. Other attempts to promote migrations were motivated by economic concerns and the idea that some migrations were necessary, but others were actually desirable. So in October 1922, an agreement was signed which allowed inhabitants of Strasbourg, Kehl and their surrounding communes to cross the border with a border pass which was valid for 1 year. And the only condition that the holder was a French or a German national residing in the commune. Now this scheme was the initiative of Strasbourg's Chamber of Commerce, who saw it as an opportunity to boost the city's economy by encouraging cross-border trips and commercial connections. And their aim was that it was Strasbourg rather than Kiel that would receive this boost. So it's hoping to promote migrations into France in one direction. However, problems emerged when inflation hit the Weimar Republic in 1923 and large numbers of German shoppers arrived in Alsace and Moselle, with the result that they pushed local prices up. Administrators became so concerned about the impact that this rise in prices would have upon popular opinion in the department that the prefects of both Alsatian departments called upon the government to restrict access to the border in order to calm popular opinion in Alsace. In response, the Commissaire General limited border crossings by German citizens, stepped up the surveillance of those Germans who did enter, and when it was deemed to be necessary, began to turn away German crossers who were in possession of the correct border passes. So while this was a measure designed to promote crossings by so-called desirable migrants, the line between desirable and undesirable was not fixed. So shoppers who had been viewed as desirable in 1922 found themselves to be turned away as undesirable in 1924 as a result of changes in the national and international context. And as with the policing of crossings, the 1930s represent a turning point in border policies. But in this area, the change is much more acute, as administrators moved from easing crossings to placing ever greater restrictions upon them. And once again, this was particularly the case after 1933 and Hitler's seizure of power in Germany. So in May of that year, the prefect of the Haut-Rhin encouraged extra vigilance in the granting of visas or travel passes to societies or groups of Germans wishing to enter the border departments. I thought this was interesting, as he said, it's absolutely nothing to do with the activity of Germans in the department. And he pointed out that the consuls had reported that no problems arose. But nonetheless, in view of the international situation, he requested extra surveillance. Meanwhile, in the Bas-Rhin, the prefect argued that the border should be closed to holidaymakers. He had a particular concern that a scandal could be provoked if fonctionnaires chose to holiday in the Black Forest, and he also added that if they couldn't go to Germany, they may go to the Vosges, which may help tourism in the departments. So it's Also, it's an interesting proposal as it reveals the interaction of anxieties about Germany with economic pressures within France. So those two brief examples show that in the 1930s, well, they suggest rather that in the 1930s there was a convergence between administrators' policies to prevent crossings and the border guards and the police's emphasis on controlling crossings. And this represented a change from the 1920s when there was some degree of discontinuity between the two areas. So having talked through some examples, first of how border guards recorded and interpreted crossings, and second of how administrators attempted to ease or to control them, I'd now like to draw this together into some conclusions. So I know that everyone is always very keen for the first coffee break to be on time. People crossed the border between France and Germany for a range of reasons after 1918. Shopping, visiting family, seeking work, membership of networks, multiple reasons. And Alsace was at the heart of these migrations. The motivations for migration did not remain fixed between 1918 and 1939. Changes in the border regime, as well as the national and international situation, each served to affect why and if people crossed the border. And these shifts also affected how the crossings were monitored, policed, and controlled by the agents of the French state. So while the concept of migrations first makes us think about the épuration of 1918 or the arrival of Français de l'intérieur, these short-term crossings had a similar effect. They also contributed to the delimiting and regulating of both territory and belonging. And as a result, they contributed to the making of the border and of the French nation in the aftermath of the First World War. And I think that this consideration of how state agents treated short-term migrants reveals the ways in which policy took shape at the periphery. Crossing guards and administrators affirmed and reproduced many of the assumptions that guided the authorities in Paris, but they also developed policy in response to practical border problems and, in particular, the realities of working at the border generated an awareness amongst state agents that certain categories of border crossings and crossers were necessary and occasionally desirable. Nonetheless, while these policies arose at the periphery, they were inseparable from the broader national and international climate. Measures to ease crossings may have been rooted in questions of local practicality rather than internationalism, but it was only possible to introduce passes for borderlands, for migrants with territorial or family links in 1922 and 1925 as a result of the broader mood of this period in France with growing support for Franco-German rapprochement. And this result of the interaction between the different scales, the different echelles of local, national and international, resulted in the coexistence of measures to ease and measures to prevent crossings, and a system that could appear to be inconsistent and contradictory. And these inconsistencies remind us that the state is not a monolith. Even the French Republic contains a multitude of actors who took decisions and developed policies in a range of ways, in spite of the reputation for uniformity and centralisation that the Republic has. So as a final thought, these short-term migrations warn us against viewing the development of borders teleologically. So it's not the case that the early 20th century represented a period of increasingly strict border regimes that came to an end with the era of European integration after the Second World War that is now being challenged. On the contrary, the picture that emerges from these short-term migrations in Alsace in the years after 1918 is one of variable opening and closure of the border. Crossings were eased for certain categories of crossers in 1922, but then monitored more closely in 1924 and then eased again in 1925. Equally, those who are viewed as desirable and undesirable could vary, as the shoppers found, between 1922 and 1923. So the lesson is, I think, that migrations policy did not develop in a linear way and changed first across time and second across people. Thank you.